This program is supported by Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers, and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. It's Friday, April 4th, 2003, 10:04 a.m. on the Central Coast. It's time for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. In a moment, we will start our discussion of the Santa Cruz Digital Arts Festival with two of its participating artists. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about With the Geeks. During the second half of the show, I will welcome you to join our conversation. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. I'll be giving those numbers again when I invite you to participate in about a half an hour. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, John Tracy, Dee Dee Hubbard, and Chris Dunphy. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, morning. Lyle.
Morning.
What a nice full house we have. I appreciate you all being here. Chris Dunphy,
yes,
you recently
indeed.
Bought a large 200 gigabyte drive, hard drive, with a FireWire enclosure, which makes it an external drive, in hopes that you'll be able to access your drive from both your Mac and your Windows box. Did it go well?
This is an example of how even for geeks, sometimes just technology fails you. The mission was to I've got a Mac laptop and a PC desktop, and I wanted a big honkin' external hard drive that I can use on both. And I got a dual mode enclosure, FireWire and USB, so I could be able to, in theory, plug this into any computer anywhere and access the disks. But the catch is, you have to format the disk in a format that can be read by both devices. The one format that is supported by both Mac and PC is a FAT32 format.
Which is a pretty common format, file format.
FAT32 came out in early versions of Windows and is supported in general everywhere, and in theory supports disks up to 2 terabytes in size, so should be able to handle plenty big stuff. Catches I ran into, Microsoft is at fault on one hand because Windows XP, to try and encourage people to move to NTFS, the new file system there, will no longer format large FAT32 hard drives. It'll only format them up to 32 gigabytes.
Well 32 gigabytes is relatively large, but not up to 200 gigabytes.
200 is great. And you know, they have 250 gig hard drives out there now. I paid well under $200 for a 200 gigabyte hard drive. It's just amazing. So
you're able to format it finally, I'm assuming?
Well,
with a Windows?
Well, no? I actually had to pull out an old Windows 95 boot floppy and experience some horrible joys of doing NAS. I had to take the drive out of the enclosure, hook it up to the PC, and eventually got it formatted, only to discover that on the Mac side, the Mac OS 10.2 seems to have problems mounting partitions on a 200 gig hard drive. The Mac couldn't handle a partition larger than 120 gigs.
And a partition is a way of making
splitting
a drive
the hard drive into pieces.
Look like multiple
right.
drives.
So just to split the hard drive, I split in half into 200 gig hard drives internally, and should be within the range of what the Mac would be able to see. And but then there seems to be some other glitch in the OS that it couldn't handle two partitions that large.
So the long and the short of it, in some sense, is large hard drives right now shared between or 200 gig or above 128 gigs really,
yes.
On a Mac and a PC. External are almost impossible to do?
Just don't do it right now.
Dee Dee, do you have any suggestions on this?
I've heard a couple of experiences of people who have tried to split different partitions on large hard drives between NTFS and HFS Plus, which is the Mac native file system, and I've heard varying results. I've tried it myself, and I can't get the right combination to work quite yet. It seems to be either a voodoo science or which one comes first, the chicken or the egg. So right now it is kind of, you're right, it's hard.
Why not throw the hard drive onto a Unix box?
And then share it?
And share it.
The whole idea was a portable hard drive that I could take to work or take to parties and, you know, take anywhere I wanted to have data accessible by any computer anywhere.
So get a really small Unix box.
Yeah, well, let's be honest here. FAT32 is a bad file system. Putting 200 gigabytes all on one FAT32 file system is just asking for it to get screwed up. It's something, you ever have those times where you don't shut down your computer correctly and you have to go through ScanDisk? A ScanDisk on a full 200 gigabyte partition would take a day, if not more.
And you're wasting a lot of disk space with FAT32.
Miles, how do you really feel? Well, Miles, there is no other alternative right now as far as a cross-platform file system. And so FAT32, in theory, is the best choice, and it should be able to support adequately, as long as you don't hard power off your device, should be able to support adequately very, very large drives.
Well, were you really worried about just accessing the data or read-write the data?
Well, read-write. What's the point otherwise?
Well, just reading, I can think of a lot of reasons why you'd want to just read it.
No, I got to say that if you're going to use FAT32 and you get it to work, it's going to create all kinds of metafile data on the Apple side that if you delete, makes all your data go bad.
If you're going to buy a large external FireWire drive for shared access, keep it under 128 megs.
Well, you actually have to. While in theory it handles 2 terabytes, that's not the implementation. That's the theoretical for what they could possibly pull out of the file system, and it may even be slower at that.
All right. Let's get on to our next subject. I'm sure we could talk at length on this, but Miles, what's going on in Santa Cruz?
There's an ordinance on the to-do list for the County of Santa Cruz Board of Supervisors that will require local businesses, basically anyone who sells a CRT, CRT being a computer monitor.
The big kind, not the flat panel, but the normal ones that
right.
we all have.
Or a TV. TVs
or a
TV. Are also CRTs as well. To take the CRT from anyone who happens to have an old monitor that's either broken or they just don't want it anymore, to drop it off free of charge and have the business take it to the dumping ground, paying $18 per CRT.
So what Santa Cruz, and is this county?
Yeah, this is county.
So Santa Cruz County in general is maybe going to pass this legislation that will enforce any company that sells CRTs, televisions or computer monitors, to have to take from anybody without any kind of limitation CRTs for free, and they cost about $18 to get rid of them, right?
Right.
That's about right. So what do you think this is going to do to small businesses?
Basically, what's happening is you have small businesses that in this economy right now are having trouble staying afloat anyway. So they have a couple of choices. They can either do this, try to pass on their cost to the customer, but if their costs go up, it just means people are going to send more business over the hill to Fry's. Or they can stop selling CRTs altogether, which means you can't buy a monitor in Santa Cruz. You would buy an LCD, for example. But it means that if you wanted to buy a monitor, you can't buy one from a local business. You would have to go out of Santa Cruz. Again, defeating the purpose of, you know, where do you deal with dumping? Where do you take it?
Is this kind of legislation happening in other places? Do you know?
There was legislation being proposed in Los Angeles. I believe this is the one that the Santa Cruz County ordinance was drafted on. Problem also being that businesses don't have to take back just the things that they have sold to people. It's anyone who has a monitor or CRT that they've bought from anywhere can drop it off. For all the people that have monitors stacked up in their garage and whatnot over years and want to dump it out, that first year you're going to be seeing thousands of dollars being sucked out of a local business.
Yeah, absolutely. I know the schools, they have hundreds of monitors to get rid of.
Right, and the other note is the larger businesses that are in the area, like Circuit City and the like, chances are they will fight it in legal battles. They will probably try to get an injunction on this.
But only affecting them?
Well, not necessarily. It may just be they'll be fighting it, which means that you're going to have a whole bunch of legal costs, which would have to be borne by the community
mm-hmm.
itself. So basically what you're talking about is something that an ordinance that it seems like their heart's in the right place, but the end result isn't going to be you're going to have safer dumping. It just ends up being that you're going to defer whose responsibility it is.
Right. Well, Miles, thank you very much for keeping us up to date on the current geek affairs. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. We've been speaking with geeks Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, John Tracy, Chris Dunphy, and Dee Dee Hubbard. Did I get everybody?
Yeah.
Maybe twice. we are going to be going back to our... We're going to be, in a moment, welcoming some guests, some artists, Peter Chester and Jesse Rose Del Roy, about the digital Santa Cruz Digital Arts Festival. They'll be joining us in just a moment. You are listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell.
This is John Tracy bringing you a Geek Bit. What are drivers? Drivers are bits of software that allow the computer to communicate to all the external gadgetry we like to plug into it. By external, I mean things that are not ensconced directly on the motherboard. Most PCI cards you plug into it will need drivers. PCI cards include graphics, sound, networking, SCSI cards, stuff like that. All of these will need drivers. Some CD players and burners and most external devices like scanners and digital cameras will need drivers. Printers will need drivers, and then they'll need them reinstalled all the time to keep the printer and computer talking. In these situations where you have to keep reinstalling drivers, it's best to think of yourself like a relationship counselor. Oddly, not everything you plug into your computer will need a driver. A standard keyboard, for example. And if you're running Mac OS X or Windows XP, most things will not need additional drivers. Why? Because the drivers have either been written into the OS or they are included with the OS install. In Mac OS 9 and earlier, the drivers were called extensions because they extended the scope of what the OS handled. They also caused a lot of headaches. The best tool for dealing with this was the Extensions Manager, and a lot of patience to find and resolve the conflicting extensions. So how does a driver actually work? Well, that's not as important as what to do when they break. When your external device suddenly stops talking to the computer, especially when you've just upgraded or installed something, it's time to visit the manufacturer's website to find and download the latest drivers. The most common problem is finding out which piece of gadgetry it is that needs a driver, and after installing it, finding out which other driver is conflicting with it. With a little digging and a judicious use of Google, most driver issues can be resolved fairly quickly. Just do a Google search with the name and model number of the hardware and the word driver. Usually, you'll find what you need in the first few sites. This has been John Tracy with your Geek Bit. Tune in Friday mornings for Geek Speak here on listener-supported Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. Computers are used for a variety of reasons, but most people think of them as complicated calculators. But they are being used for entertainment and for art. The Santa Cruz Digital Art Festival's goal is to present Santa Cruz digital artists and the concept of digital art to local galleries and venues while engaging the local community in the dialogue of what digital art is. The festival is run by the generous efforts of an all-volunteer organization committee and local businesses and organizations that have committed to providing advertising, printing, venues, and equipment to make the festival possible. Most of the events and exhibitions are free or at a nominal charge. Joining us in the air room are artists Peter Chester and digital musician, and the audio goddess Jesse Rose Del Roy. But first, we're going to talk to Daryl Weiss, the Santa Cruz Digital Arts organizer, and get a little back down. Daryl, thanks for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure. Nice to see you.
So how did the Digital Arts Festival start?
Well, it started out with a couple of people getting together last year, and this woman, Bridget Geist, had an idea to do a digital arts festival. She didn't really know what exactly she wanted to do, but she wanted a digital arts festival. And it's kind of timely because it's starting to take shape across the world in different festivals and venues across the world. So my background is an organizer, and I have a degree in PR, so I thought, well, I'll direct it, and let's get a group of people. So we put a call for entries out, and we got a group of about 10 people to start, and everyone, we kind of divvied everybody up into their own specialty. And, for instance, Jesse was with music, and Peter's with the web design, besides being a musician, and we had someone do the poster design, and we have people organizing different aspects of the festival. So it was kind of easy getting the group together, and now there's basically probably about five or six of us all working hard to get this thing together. It's all free, and it's all volunteer events.
So tell us about some of the events that are happening or available.
Great. Well, last night we saw you at the kickoff at the Museum of Art and History in Santa Cruz. We had Peter Chester and Deep Fried played music, and we had visuals by Chris Connor, and we had discussions. The whole thing about this Digital Arts Festival is education, to let artists express themselves, because a lot of times you don't have an opportunity. So we have gallery space, we have free printing. Hewlett-Packard gave us free printing for everybody, real color. You know, all these companies are helping us, and we have a printer in town who's printing everything for free for us, and the Catalyst is giving us space for to do a couple, you know, events, and also the union, which used to be the Java House, are doing a couple events. So we have a couple of cool things going on there. We have discussions. We have something about. We have four different events, and what I want to do is to, I'll just really briefly give you a little information, but mostly just go to our website, santacruzdigitalarts.org, and it's all there. So.
And in general, there's something happening from now, pretty much every evening.
Well, the deal is we have the entire month, but what we did is we decided instead of going last year, we had the entire month of events, and for a small volunteer bunch of group people, it was hard, yeah. So we decided we're going to just try to keep it maybe 2 weeks. So we have 2 weeks from the 3rd to the 19th. It's pretty power-packed. We have discussions and workshops and events and music and exhibitions. But the art exhibitions, the 2D and 3D artwork on the wall, is going to be at galleries for the entire month.
Nice.
And so that's what we're doing there.
But if you really want to participate in this, doing it now is great because you get to see how the artists create their work, what they're doing, that kind of thing.
That's exactly what we wanted to do. We wanted to let people understand about photography, understand about how to make digital music, some of the points about, you know, the discussing digital fine art and what are some of the points to copyright laws and some of the issues that the digital artists are talking about these
right.
days.
Well, thank you very much for the rundown on that. Stay with us, Daryl.
Great.
And also in the air room, Peter Chester, digital musician, and the audio goddess, is that right?
Correct.
Jesse Rose DeRoy. Thank you both for joining us. Now, you're both, I'm assuming, do music.
Yeah.
Is that too much of a generalization?
Doing music.
I definitely have a background in music and in radio, but also in multimedia production in general. I started out about 8 or 9 years ago, and just fell most naturally into audio and editing and being an engineer. But I recently become more interested in doing a lot of video and film, so mm-hmm. I'm kind of expanding my horizons there. But I don't know how I'm going to change audio video goddess. I don't know.
Yeah.
The AV goddess.
Doesn't really work. Yeah. Right. so. I want to ask you both. Computers are kind of cold and crass in a lot of ways. And, you know, art is this whole thing from the soul, if you will. How do you get those two things combined into making this medium, which is, you know, calculations, into art form?
That's quite the challenge. If you're talking about actually using a computer to make art, it's all about interface. I think that you have to feel at least somewhat intuitively connected with what you're working with in order for you to express any sort of passion.
Right, that makes sense. I mean, a painter has to know a brush and that kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think that I still rely really heavily on my own brain, my own computer, the machine inside my head to really come up with the ideas. And I'm doing a lot of the thinking and creating. So, working with audio, I don't... I have to be able to hear what I'm doing. You know, I can't just look... I can see it on the screen, and it's visually represented there for me, but I still have to use... you know, actual sound to create with. So,
speaking of sound to create with, Peter, you've got your laptop plugged in, mm-hmm. nice titanium, I see. And you want to give us a little bit of a feel for what your music is?
Well, I would love to, Lyle.
All right, great. let's do this.
Well, you've got me on.
I got you on, I think. Let's give it a shot.
Well, let me start by impressing upon you that we will be playing on Saturday the 12th. That's we'll be opening for the Mermen on Saturday the 12th at the Union, previously the Java House.
Okay.
So I should
what
be...
What time?
Should be... Sorry.
7 o'clock.
Oh, 8 o'clock.
Yeah, 8 o'clock's fine.
I should be hearing something.
You're not getting it?
No, yeah.
RCA is in. Yeah, you're plugged in. You sure you got output on there?
I see output.
Technology challenges
uh-huh.
at its best.
Previously the Java House.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
At the Union.
No, is that right?
Yeah,
okay.
It could be maybe. At the Union, previously the Java House, Saturday the 12th.
So, yeah, I see what I do is
see, I captured a little loop of what I just said.
The
Java House, Saturday
and then I can mix in
at the Union,
other. I'm seeing these loops on my screen, you know.
At the Union,
so, and what I can do is mix in some other loops of the same thing, and then maybe throw in some drums.
At the Union, previously the Java House, Saturday the 12th. At the Union, previously the Java House, Saturday the 12th.
at the Union, previously the Java House. Saturday,
so, in case you're forgetting, we're going to be at the Union Saturday as well. And, you know, do things like
at the Union, previously the Java House.
And
Saturday later,
backwards. Maybe select a small chunk of what I'm saying.
He's got his Apple PowerBook out.
And some filtration, and maybe some delay. And, you know.
And onward.
All right, that's pretty good.
Number one hit.
Now, do you, when you're forming your music, you're doing that kind of on the fly all the time?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's live. It's live production from a computer, which is kind of different from how computers have been used traditionally in music, in as much as mm-hmm. it's really just the recorded medium and the way to mass produce it to your friends.
Yeah, I put this program together using there's a software that only works on Macintosh called Max, M-A-X. It's designed for artists and musicians. It's locally made software, actually. It's made by people in California. Doesn't enjoy a large popularity yet, but I predict that it will. They recently even came out with a plugin for making video, but what this is a software you can make the software yourself. It's a software environment you get little objects, like you can get a number box or something, connect it to another object, like a function, like plus one or something,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, there you go, you've got a number plus one. So I've got all these. I made an interface for myself, and this environment has allowed me to make this interface do something.
So you're a programmer along with being
an
artist.
But at the same time, this style of programming is made for people who are not so intense. They're, you know, I don't know all the ins and outs of how this actually works. I just, you know, it's an interface to work with.
Sure.
And then what we do is we mix live inputs and live sound. And that's where you're talking about the artistry inside technology. Well, there's the artistry is having the live sound and having live stuff to work with,
yeah,
and being
right.
able to do things on the fly. And we call it, in the end, we call it electrofolk.
Electrofolk? That's electrofolk. The actual medium?
That's the output. It sounds like folk music a lot of the time in the end. And wow. It's entirely electronically composed, so we call it electrofolk.
That makes sense. It's also that grabbing the bits of where you are is a very, you know, organized into a tight community like folk music.
Yeah, right. And starting, you know, the grassroots kind of approach to it, not
right.
Try to take it modestly. Also, I should just say one small thing. I think I forgot to say my band is myself and Robert Cross. We're Deep Fried. We're opening for the Merman.
Right. Okay.
He's a bass player.
And when is that?
What?
And when is that?
That's on Saturday the 12th at the Union, previously the Java House.
This is Geek Speak. I'm Lyle Troxell. You're listening to Discussion with Peter Chester and Jesse Rose DeRoy, also Daryl Rice, all from the Digital Arts Festival, artists in Santa Cruz. We talked a little bit about Peter. We got to experience your art, which is great. I assumed last night when I was thinking about the show, I was like, you know, he'll bring a laptop and he'll have his stuff. It's going to happen, so I'm glad it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to do that again in a second, if that's okay.
Pleasure.
And Jesse, can you talk a little bit about what you're doing right now in your art?
Well, in relation to the Digital Arts Festival, I am putting together a video night and have been working with a lot of local, both amateur and professional videographers, to present an evening of digital video. And it's really been an interesting process because you can really learn a lot from people who are just at the very beginning level by teaching or asking them questions. You learn more about what they're doing.
When you say the beginning level, what do you mean? Just open the public?
Just people. Well, people who are, you know, they just got themselves a camera and they have iMovie and they go in there and they just go for it, you know. And I think that there are a lot of tech software tools and software and hardware that's becoming affordable and accessible and easy enough to use for people that they can just sit down and start experimenting with it. And I think, you know, there's a certain amount of beginner's beauty in the beginner that they have are exploring a new medium. So working with those people is fun.
You know, that's very true about pretty much any medium. When you experience someone that's attacking for the first time, they don't have any of this preconcepts of being trapped in the medium, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Which of course is hard to do if you're if you're a capable artist. You're not really trapped in the medium, but there is that stage in between beginning and being a really capable artist where you feel like, you know, you're streamlined a little bit in this medium.
Mm-hmm.
An oil painter, for example, might never think to go three-dimensional on their canvas.
Mm-hmm.
So, but a beginning artist doesn't necessarily have that, and that's a great feeling to get from someone, just the drive for the art.
One of my favorite groups of people that are part of the festival in the video night, which is at the Rio Theater this Sunday night at 7 p.m., there's a family of video artists. They're also into poetry and music and dance, and it's mother and father and their son and daughter, and everyone in the family has created little videos, and they've all learned how to edit, and their works have been going into different film festivals, and so that I thought that was pretty exciting to see it to be more than just something for the generation of techno people, that it's kind of crossing age barriers and really not just for people who are not technically challenged.
And that's this Sunday at 7 at the Rio Theater?
That's correct, this Sunday at 7 p.m. It's in conjunction with, we do a regular short film and video screening at the Rio once a month called Microcinema International. And I would say that those are very high caliber short films and videos that are selected from a larger pool of people. But there will be 3D animation in that screening on Sunday night, as well as everything from avant-garde shorts to short narrative films to skateboarding films. There's a really broad section, and they're all under 11 minutes, so it's kind of easy to...
How does someone get into that program if they have short films?
Well, the Rio Theater is really open to presenting people's work, so any time of the day, you can just drop things by the theater, give us a call, check out our website, is at riotheater.com, and it's pretty easy. I've also been involved in hanging some of the art that's going to be up in the exhibition spaces all throughout April. So.
And this is printed work.
This is printed work, yeah.
To find more information about the Santa Cruz Digital Arts Festival, you can go to www.santacruzdigitalarts.org. We are talking with Peter Chester and Jesse Rose, Jesse Rose DeRay, and Peter is going to entertain us a little bit more.
All right. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Go for it. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. You've been listening to a discussion with Peter Chester and Jesse Rose DeRoy. You can keep that going, Peter, if you'd like, about digital art and the Santa Cruz Digital Arts Festival happening now in Santa Cruz County. I invite your questions and comments about digital art or anything related to technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. My name is Lyle Troxell, and you're listening to Geek Speak. In the air room with me are some geeks, and Peter Chester and Jesse Rose DeRoy. We're talking about the Digital Art Festival, Santa Cruz Digital Arts Festival, happening now in Santa Cruz County. You can learn more information about the Santa Cruz Digital Art Festival by going to santacruzdigitalarts.org. You may now join our discussion. The phone numbers to join GeekSpeak and talk to these artists, 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. This program is supported by a grant from Cruzeo, providing internet service, including DSL and spam filters, for home and office throughout Santa Cruz County. Information about Cruzeo membership is available online at cruzeo.com or calling 459-6301. If you have any questions or comments about digital art, the phone numbers to join GeekSpeak, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You are listening to GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The Geeks and I are talking with Peter Chester and Jesse Rose Doroy about digital art and the Santa Cruz Digital Arts Festival happening now in Santa Cruz County. Peter, that was great.
Thank you.
I think we have a new GeekSpeak theme.
I know. I love it.
I think like we need a new GeekSpeak theme to be generated here on the fly.
You know, this is recorded, so maybe we can just throw that in.
Yeah, you're welcome to keep it.
Oh, that's great. It was wonderful. Thank you very much. I'm really glad that you're able to bring that art to radio because... Yeah. It's interesting to see that live. Well, it's like being on the show. I gotta say,
I'm glad my computer didn't crash in the process of trying as it normally tries to do whenever there's a critical moment for a production.
And I think doing that all on the fly of mixing us and stuff, that was great. That was fun. I'm glad you were able to handle that.
I think that's one of the issues around using technology for art is having that patience and sense of humor with your machine because it's really, you know. It's like when you're using it for work or for emails or things like that, you become sort of entrenched in a very sterile kind of environment. But I definitely, most of the artists that I know that use computers are, you know, they have names and definite relationships with their computers that are strong.
Unprintable on radio names.
Wayne Jackson of Woodstockhausen, he puts together Woodstockhausen every year, and this is on the 15th, we're having a Kinderbender, a small group of the Woodstockhausen folk getting together, Woodstockhausen family, at the Catalyst, right?
Yep.
The Catalyst, mm-hmm. at 8 o'clock.
On the date again?
Tuesday the 15th of this month, April.
Okay.
And I learned the best from him on what to do in a critical breakdown. He builds his own software utterly from scratch, and it's really interesting stuff too. And a lot of the people at Woodstockhausen do similar things, but his software is, you know, so homemade, so homebrewed. It really does have a tendency to, you know, kind of go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And last time I saw him play a really great piece, and it ended with this huge bang, and it was just perfect. And then he looked with this horrible shock on his face. Apparently, that bang wasn't supposed to be there.
From San Miguel, we have Robin. Hello, Robin. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. I'm sorry my question doesn't relate to your topic this week.
That's okay.
I have a desktop PC whose OS is Windows ME, and I recently got a laptop whose OS is Windows XP, and I need to know how to make them communicate to share files and share a printer.
So I'm saying you have an ME and a Windows XP?
Right.
Okay, well, you basically just need a hub and setting up internet connections. What you want to do, I'm assuming, do both these computers connect to the internet right now?
Yes.
Okay. Do you connect through a modem?
Yes.
Okay. To share the files, there's a couple ways to do this. You could, of course, get some kind of external hard drive medium that you can go between the two, or you get a CD burner for one of them and burn CDs. But the great way to connect these two computers is using a network. Now, it could be that these computers have Ethernet jacks already, and what it's going to look like on the back of the computer to find out is like a larger size phone jack. So a phone jack beefed up, if you will, supersized phone jack.
Right.
And that's an Ethernet jack.
The laptop is Ethernet ready and the desktop isn't.
Okay. What you're going to need to do for that desktop then is to go to your local...
go to a computer store.
Yeah.
You can buy an Ethernet card. Even
very,
a 10100 for, you know, $10 to $15.
Uh-huh.
So you don't have to spend much money at all. Now, the problem is connecting the two. you'll either need some sort of a small hub or a specially cut wire.
I would go with the hub. It's going to be a little easier, and if you ever add a printer, you'll have better use of the printer. So, yeah, when you go in there, get a piece, and the piece, and a network card is going to cost her...
It's like $10 or $15,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, it's really cheap.
And the hub will be enough, maybe $20 as well, and a few dollars worth of cable in your business.
Yeah, two cables in your set.
Well, aren't there various kinds of hubs?
There are, but if you just go in for an Ethernet hub to your local store, that's what you want.
Yeah, you can buy really portable 2- and 4-port hubs and just, you know, make sure... If you can, go get a TIM 100. You're better moving files at 100 megabit, which is about a megabyte per second.
Yeah, 10-100, it means 10 megabits/100 megabits. It can handle both of those.
Okay.
And most likely when you plug that in, your two computers will connect at 100 megabit, being very fast.
Okay, so I'm just going to have a wire coming from each unit to this hub?
That's right.
Okay.
And it's going to be, the whole technology is called Ethernet, and your local computer store will be able to help you out on what you need to get. The other thing you're going to have to do then is set up your local network in your Windows environment. And again, when you buy this stuff, I would ask your local store. And I would go to a small shop if you can. Don't go to, like, you know, a giant store. Because a smaller shop, the people that are there actually know computers pretty well.
And you want to actually see the files until you enable sharing. So you want to right-click on the directory or the file.
That you want to share.
Enable sharing. Give it a name.
You right-click on it, and it will come up with sharing. And you select sharing.
And you want to give access to...
And you could do the same thing to your printer as well. Share your printer and so that one computer can print to the other.
Okay, and so the XP and the ME are going to be able to communicate with one another? 100%.
Very easy.
Ethernet is basically the backbone of the Internet. It's very compatible with almost everything.
Alternatively, if they both have FireWire or 1394 ports, you could share the two right away with a FireWire connector.
No, I don't think they do.
But anybody out there who does, you could do the same thing.
Thank you very much, Robin, for your call.
All right, bye.
Question for Peter. Good. Hey, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hey, how y'all doing? We're calling from Ranger Outpost Tokyo. And, I got two questions for Peter Chester. The first one is, how much of a pimp do I have to be to make music like you? And second, why aren't the mermen opening up for you?
Well, Digger. Yeah, well, how much of a pimp do you have to be to make music like me? You know, I suspect you're far ahead of the pimpage that I've got under my belt. You know, to be a pimp good enough to make music like me, I mean, all you got to do really is be able to tie your shoelaces. I think you can do that.
You also went to school, though, didn't you, Peter, for music?
Yeah, I did. I went to school, and I studied. But you know what? To be honest, if you're interested in any kind of music like this, you could just start looking on the Internet, and that's where I really started. And I've been spending years on the Internet doing this kind of stuff before I ever actually... started writing my own software.
Yeah, we have a discussion going on at UCSC Extension over by the Pacific and Cathcart, and the Woodstockhausen people are going to be putting together a music seminar about music, kind of demystifying the music and how to make digital music. It's kind of a seminar 101, beginners to medium.
The artistic and technical issues of digital music production.
So that's a good way to get started.
What's part two of this question?
Part two is, why aren't the mermen opening up for you?
Oh, why aren't the mermen opening
next
up?
Time.
You know, what I want to know is why can't I take Rick Walker down in a battle of the loopers? why the mermen...
Life's tough, get a helmet.
The mermen, why they're not opening for us? Because, you know, we like to play earlier in the day. And
That's a great response.
Last year when we played the Digital Arts Festival, we ended up playing last on both the shows.
Yeah, you deserved it.
And everybody was we did deserve it. But everybody was asleep when we were playing. You know, it was quite a challenge. You know, but the mermen, you know, they make such beautiful like surf rock music. It's cool. Like if you're kind of in a coffee shop and it's late hours, it's actually just quite perfect. You know.
The mermen are going to be doing a digital experimental surf rock, so something they've never done before. So it's really kind of cool. And
so,
they're a national touring band. After this, they're going to tour nationally, and they live in Santa Cruz now, so that's all pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just because I know who's calling, you could also find some more about Deep Fried at the Burning Man if you happen to go this year. We'll be playing at Center Camp. Probably several times.
And on our website, you know, we have each of the artists has a link. So we've done something. Peter actually did our website for us, Peter, didn't you?
Yeah.
And so Peter did a great job. So you can actually go online, see the calendar events, and they're all kind of cross-referenced. And so you can look up venues, you can look up artists, you can look up the actual event and find out more about it. So we have a list of all the artists, so Peter and Jesse and all the different artists that are participating in all the different events.
On www.santacruz.
Right, just go to artists.
DigitalArts.
Yep.
.com/org.
Yeah, .org. We really, for those people who are interested in creating digital art, a lot about this festival is, part of it is in presenting the art, but it's also in opening the doors to allow people to become digital artists. And I think that's a lot of what our workshops are about, and they're free. And, you know, Peter, for instance, was an artist last year in the sound art. He did a sound art installation, and now this year he's like total organizer. And the festival is very open for people to become involved more over the years. So I would encourage people to check out the workshops. There's Demystifying Digital Photography, Artistic and Technical Issues of Digital Music Production, large format printing for the digital artist.
So if you're curious about any more of this stuff,
yeah,
you can go to these seminars.
Yeah, check it out, you know.
And just one last thing to this caller. I highly enjoy the Three Christs of Ypsilanti.
This is Geek Speak. I'm Lyle Troxell. We're speaking with artist Peter Chester and digital musician, and the audio goddess Jesse Rose Del Roy, and also Daryl Weiss, the director of the Santa Cruz Digital Arts Festival.
It doesn't roll off the tongue very easy.
www.santacruzdigitalarts.org. And it is 10:45. This is Geek Speak. From Hollister. Lucia?
Hi.
Welcome to Geek Speak.
Thank you. My question is also not related to what the artists are there about.
That's fine.
Okay. I work for a small nonprofit organization, and we're getting ready to buy a computer. Eventually, we want to be able to hook them up to the Internet, the other computers that we buy later on. Should I buy one that has networking capability, or is that not necessary?
How big is your office?
Oh, right now I'm the only person here.
Are you eventually going to have more people in it?
Yes.
It's always a good idea, and I think it pretty much comes built into any computer.
It's
going
to be hard
get.
To find a computer that doesn't have network support and have an internet jack in it. Yeah,
it's been a standard feature for about at least the last year or two.
So it's
built into the motherboards of most new motherboards and most new computers.
I mean,
so you're going to have a network connection.
A network connection card, a PCI card that works on multiple platforms, by itself is like under $15. So throwing it inside on their computer as another bell and whistle on there is basically, they do it standardly.
Are you looking to go for PCs or Macs?
PC.
PCs. Mm-hmm. You might want to check some of the different off-lease computers that are available. Off-lease. When a company leases computers,
uh-huh,
and then those leases expire,
mm-hmm,
they give them back to whomever they leased them from, Compaq or Dell or HP or whomever. Those companies will then turn around and sell those for about $200 or $300.
Oh.
When we were in the educational market, I used to purchase them.
How do you find out about those, John?
You can go up to the websites of the large computer manufacturers. We used to get ours from Dell.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Dell.com, and look for their off-lease stuff. Any large computer manufacturer that makes PCs is going to have something similar to that. And usually you'll find them around the $300 range. And they'll be like P500. So they're not top of the line,
mm-hmm,
but they're definitely fast enough to get you on the internet, definitely fast enough to run, most of the applications you're going to be running in a business.
Mm-hmm.
Lucia, thank you for the call.
Thank you very much for the information. Bye-bye.
Certainly. If anyone would like to participate in Geek Speak, the phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We're talking with Jesse Rose DeRoy and Peter Chester, both digital artists involved in the Digital Arts Festival, santacruzdigitalarts.org. We also have Daryl Weiss, the director of the organization. And we're in the second year of the program. Let's talk a little bit about print media. I know that neither of you are print media artists specifically, but Daryl, go for it.
Well, I'm not a print media artist, but my background is in the print media side. And that's, I actually started Fractal Design in Aptos. The makers of Painter, Fractal Design Painter.
I didn't know that you did that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I was working with the public relations and also the artist relations and all the marketing. At the beginning, we were probably six people. We went to probably about 30 people, went IPO, got bought out. Now the software is owned by Corel. And so things have changed a little different from the old days, I'm afraid, but that's where I actually got my chops. And to see people drawing with computers, and the issue about the coldness of the screen, I mean, I know lots of there's a lot of debate and a lot of issues about the screen and the coldness of it, and a lot of artists want to actually be more tactile and get the stuff in their fingernails and smell the paint. So there's those issues. That's a big issue. And so the computer is kind of a cold medium. You're usually drawing on a tablet, and a lot of the artwork's drawn on a Wacom tablet, and it's pressure sensitive.
I thought it was Wacom.
Wacom.
Yeah, good enough.
I thought it was Wacom.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, okay. Well, there's it could be a tablet.
It's
describe the tablet.
A Japanese company, and they're United States office up in Washington, and they are the company. It used to be probably three or four different.
Describe a tablet for us.
Tablets. There's different sizes. Of course, the bigger ones are more money, but the smaller ones, you can get a small one, a small tablet from Wacom, Wacom.com, W-A-C-O-M. And in that package, it's a small tablet for about $100. It's I think they call it a 3x5, or I think it's 3x5 is the smallest one.
3 inches by 5 inches.
Yeah,
okay.
And that's the actual space that you can actually draw.
What does it do?
And it's connected to the computer, and it's actually pressure sensitive. So with the Painter program or Illustrator or Photoshop, you can actually use it as a mouse. So it's pressure sensitive, and it's actually a mouse. And so with the paint program, you can actually get that real sensitivity. And during this art festival, we have probably about 8 different venues in Santa Cruz County where these artists are drawing, and most of them probably use the Wacom tablet. And you'll see some stuff that doesn't even look computerish. And so that's pretty cool. Even though it is 1D and it's 2D, you know, it's kind of flat. People are starting to add paint and more mixed media kind of stuff. There's lots of things taken off now. It's very, very new. And you have the inks lasting over 100 years now, and the papers lasting, and better papers. So it's starting to pick up. The companies, Hewlett-Packard and some of the big print companies are starting to take off. I understand Canon just came out with a pretty big large-format printer. And large-format printer now, you can buy them starting to get cheaper. Epson's got one. It's $3,000. So it allows the artist to actually do their art and actually control their output of their art. And so that's been pretty cool to allow the artists and to empower them to do their passion.
You know, Daryl, last time when the Cruzeo had that little festival, what was that, a month ago or something, and we had a digital arts festival booth, and Daryl had some works up that he had from, where were they, the faces?
Oh, here in town. There's a company here in town. It's Poser.
Poser.
Yeah, it's Curious Labs is the company. It's not far from here, around the corner from this studio. And Curious Labs owns Poser. And if you go to CuriousLabs.com, there's Poser. It's a 3D mannequin program, and you cannot believe the faces and the textures and the hair and stuff that's going on with 3D now is amazing.
Well,
amazing.
We got in kind of a debate about it because you can make digital art that approximates reality, or you can make digital art that is totally grounded in being just art. You know, it's not trying to imitate reality. And we got in kind of a debate about the fact that one of the faces looked really real, and that's the one that you liked kind of the best. And one of them looked totally unreal, and that's the one I really liked the best. And I was kind of wondering, you know, for callers, if anybody has any comments towards the use of digital art as an approximation towards reality.
I do.
476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. John, you were saying?
I always see animation as one of the greatest arts because you combine so many different things together. And I've noticed that, you know, like there was the recent movie Final Fantasy where they went for as realistic as they could. But I seem to enjoy the more stylistic art where they take this medium where, you know, yes, it's been going towards realism and it's almost there, but it's so much better, I think, when they take that and they use their imagination and they come up with something completely different that you've never seen before, never experienced before. I don't know, I just think that's so much better because it makes you so much more aware of things.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of opens your mind a bit.
Mm-hmm. One thing about digital art is it's not going to replace watercolors or pastels or, you know, chalk. It's just another medium and then that you cannot... There's art you could not do if you didn't have the use of the computer, and mm-hmm. and allows people to have such a small little area, and you can put together artwork that's just incredible. You know, I sometimes just kind of dabble around at home, and I put it out, and no one's ever going to see it again, but the fact that like creative, and it allows me to just to be a little more creative with what I'm doing. And
you don't have to have turpentine.
And no turpentine, and nothing goes down the drain, you know, and it's... Really
except for when you recycle your computer.
right. And, you know, it allows, I work with a lot of seniors and people with disabilities, and the Wacom tablet is pressure sensitive. So a lot of people who can't use, have a hard, strong hand function, you're allowed to, it allows you to set your own sensitivity. So the Wacom tablet's amazing. And again, you get a little tiny tablet, the starters, and then with that you get a Photoshop Lite and also a Painter Lite program. So it gets you kind of started. And you can plug it into your laptop. You can go up into the mountains and do drawings. I've seen all that. There's so much stuff going on right now. And then you have some bigger tablets, which are more professional, 6x9, and then the bigger tablets, like 12x12 for if you like large stroke stuff. And a lot of the big advertising houses and the creatives all around the world are using the tablets. You know, you go to any advertising place or a studio, they'll all have the Wacom tablets, Painter, Illustrator, Photoshop, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, let's talk a little bit about philosophy, about how, I mean, I really want to talk about how people perceive computers as this cold medium, and as artists in the computer realm, you talk about computers as your medium, you know, do your shows and stuff. Are people pleasantly surprised that art's coming out of computers? Is that one of the first reactions?
They can't believe it. I swear, if you gotta come out to the art, we have all the art galleries are listed on our website. We're having an art walk on the 12th and 13th. There's probably about 8 galleries that are participating. The Picture Appeal downtown. We have a new gallery in downtown that Jesse and I just hung artwork the other day called Pray for Art. It's next door to Love Dog Tattoo.
And where is that?
On SoCal Avenue, near the Crepe Place.
Okay.
And so we have a whole wall full of artwork there, and it's kind of a different style of artwork that hasn't been in Santa Cruz.
And if people go to the show, which I highly recommend, any of these shows, make sure you see at least two, because the arts are very varied.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, in response to what you're saying, it's interesting because you're having a technology that's incredibly sophisticated. It offers an excuse to not really make art, but to just play with the technology, and it's something that's a kind of a challenge to avoid just exploiting your technology and not really making art, as opposed to working through the technology or working with the technology but not being wholly dependent on it. I mean, for like me, I have to be dependent on it the way I set it up, but because if my computer crashes, literally there's no more sound. I mean, that's it. Boop, there's no more sound.
Well, you could sing.
But right. Well, I can't because the mics go through the computer. So
okay.
There's like literally there's all the powered sound is out. So, you know, the question begs it's to be asked what happens in a power outage, right? But well, that's just it. So like there's a dependency on the technology, and a lot of people get really caught up in the technology. I get caught up in the technology, and I find that's like one of the biggest challenges I face as an artist is to avoid.
So stay away from.
Hey, look, I made these cool sounds with a computer, as opposed to, and then not really listening to the sounds and saying, wait, those aren't really that good. You know, like it's important to sit back, forget about the computer, and just listen. You know.
So it's partially the removing yourself from a geek and putting yourself in the artist role.
Yeah.
Even though you have to be good at both. No.
Yeah, that's the challenge for sure. And that's not just with computers, that's with any technology. Sure.
I have a different problem when I sit down in front of the computer to do art. Mm-hmm. I often find myself, you know, checking my mail or getting totally lost.
Well, that's why on this computer I didn't install any other application except for my art application.
Very
specifically
smart.
For that reason.
Also makes it more stable.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Stability. Actually, that's the main reason.
A lot of people, when listening to the art that I do, which is primarily actually making radio, you wouldn't think, you know, but I'm using the computer to create radio, and people have no idea when they're listening to a radio program that actually it was all recorded on mini disc recorders, digital, and transferred, of course, not digitally. That's a little problem, but but then I'll edit it on the computer and burn to CD, and you know, it's kind of an invisible. I think when the tools become invisible and what you end up with is a nice finished product, that's, I think, good art, whether
Amen.
It's used on the computer or not.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
We record all the Geek Speak on a computer, a Mac, actually, and when you hear recorded bits on Geek Speak, lots of times they're on the computer. Well, they're on either two computer systems, a radio station computer system called Cart Ready or a Mac on the desk right here in front of me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's being used in radio as a tool in general.
All the time.
Yeah, but in traditionally it's used more in an editing down concept or a recording concept. Mm-hmm. The idea of actually producing new works on the computer, not just scanning
right.
something in, changing the color, but actually really making a difference that you couldn't do in a normal in another medium,
mm-hmm.
is I guess kind of the crucial bit of why the Santa Cruz Digital Arts Festival is trying to enlighten people on what's going on. I would think the Santa Cruz Digital Arts Festival, SantaCruzDigitalArts.org. This is GeekSpeak. This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers, innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. This is GeekSpeak. I'm Lyle Troxell. We have been speaking with artists, the audio goddess, Jesse Rose DeRoy, and Peter Chester, digital musician. Also with us was Daryl Weiss, who is the director. Is it Weiss or Weiss?
Wise guy.
The director of the Santa Cruz Arts Festival. SantaCruzDigitalArts.org. You can find out more information. The event is happening all throughout this month. Lots of different programs. You can be enlightened on the art that's being created and how it's being created by participating in that program. Thank you all very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having us here.
Can we have a little more music from
Peter?
Yes. Go ahead, Peter.
All right.
The Geeks This Morning with Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, Sean Tracy, Chris Dunphy, and Dee Dee Hubbard. My name is Lyle Troxell. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland. For those that called in, thank you very much for making Geek Speak what it is. Without you, it'd just be a whole bunch of geeks talking. And who wants to listen to that? I'm Lyle Troxell. We'll be back next week, 10 a.m., with more geekiness. Now, stay tuned for Fine Print.